Greetings and welcome to Trottle Up. And this is a radio show that showcases critical thinking. I'm not sure I said that right. Anyway, so we are all about critical thinking, and that's what Trottle Up is all about. And it is a radio show that is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. And I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I guess you could say that I'm an expert in the field of critical thinking. I am a naval aviator, and so we were trained to do that in my business, primarily in the field of aviation. And so, in addition to critical thinking, there were other aspects of that that we were more or less forced to emphasize because of the critical nature of the environment and the aircraft that we were flying. And as you can imagine, carrier aviation was pretty critical and extremely dangerous. And so we had to develop some ways of thinking that were non-traditional, that they were not typical. And they all fall under the general category, I guess you could say, though, of critical thinking. There were various aspects of that that we emphasized, some more than others. One of the things that we emphasized, well, I guess there were two big things that we did that kind of set us apart. But the whole idea of this show is that whatever we were able to use, I believe and we believe that it has general application across the board, particularly if we were dealing with complex problems in our business environment or dealing with complex issues in our personal lives. I think all of it we can learn and I guess be informed in a way that enables us to do things better and easier. So anyway, so that's the whole idea behind this radio show, is to take these concepts that we developed in aviation in the fighter community and bring them out into the public arena at large. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary, and our motto is to employ high-velocity reason to achieve high-octane performance. And our mission statement is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Our website is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. And we are still doing the final, we're in the final stages of cranking up our podcast capability. And I think there's just one more step to go. And we will then have that up and running so you can download this show anytime, any place. And let's see, the audio engineering services for the show is provided by Evergrove Studios. And they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is in the foothills outside of Denver. And they are a wonderful group of professionals that I would recommend to anyone who desires to have audio engineering services and wants to get involved in anything audio. Now, Throttle Up is organized into three parts. Part one is a ongoing discussion of critical thinking and the various aspects, particularly its application in the real world. So we kind of take it out of the theoretical and we place it into a real world context. And most of what we talk about actually happened or is happening. And so I think it adds an additional dimension to the discussion of critical thinking, where I think it probably is more accessible to most people. And having said that, I will say that critical thinking tends to be discussed in abstract terms that are sometimes a little bit difficult to understand, or a little bit difficult to understand how we might be able to use it in a real world setting. Okay, so that's part one. Part two is storyboard. Storyboard is a story of stuff, I guess you would say. It's a story of America. It could be a story of an individual. It's a storyline. So we construct some kind of a story and talk about it. Typically, it has to do with what you would call current events. Some of it is pretty necessary to cover. Some of it's a little bit difficult because some stuff is kind of depressing. But anyway, we try to keep this show on a positive footing and enthusiastic about our lives and our futures. Part three, finally, is the radio essay. And radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. And it often is, it could be a book report, it could be a discussion of a particular subject that relates in an overall sense to critical thinking. So, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. And this is a place where all critical thinkers are welcome with open arms, and where America finds solutions. Now let's go on to part one. Welcome back to part one of Throttle Up for this week. Part one is a continuing discussion of critical thinking. And we will continue our discussion. Now, you remember in the last few segments, we've kind of set the stage here to carry on a particularly important aspect of critical thinking. And the stage or the scenario that we created is that we are, you and I, are part of a hypothetical team, if you will, a team that has been brought together. Sometimes it's called a tiger team. It's been brought together to address itself to a particular issue or problem facing a particular industry. And this industry happens to be the oil platform industry, which is the offshore oil platform industry. And the subject is, or has to do with, providing training to the operators and managers of these oil platforms in the area of risk management. So we could call it risk management or operational risk management. ORM is a typical term here that's often used. So we could call it operational risk management, and that's our job, is to create a series of training modules that might be beneficial in helping these oil platform operators and managers do a better job of risk management, because heretofore they have not proven, or the situation has proven to be rather difficult, and they have experienced problems and even catastrophes. If you remember the Deepwater Horizon event, the Deepwater Horizon catastrophe, and of course the movie that was depicted this particular environment and the difficulties that the people faced when dealing with complex and threatening situations. So the idea here was, okay, let's not dive into this thing right away, but let's step back a moment and take a look at perhaps what other industries have done. Have they addressed themselves to this issue of risk management in complex environments? Or another way of saying that is critical thinking in complex environments means the same thing. What have other industries done in this area? And have these attempts proven to be successful? All right, so that is our discussion for this week, is that we are not going to just dive right in here and start writing lesson plans. We're going to find out if, in fact, other industries have encountered this particular situation, and if they have, what have they done about it, and has it proven to be successful? Okay, so in doing so, we can say in our hypothetical story here that, and of course, this is a storyboard, and so, I'm sorry, this is all about critical thinking, but it is a story that we have wrapped ourselves around. And one of the members of this team had come across something that they wanted to discuss with all the team members. And so one of the members gets up and says, in looking at what we have or what other industries have done with respect to this particular issue, there was a gentleman that addressed himself to this particular issue in some fashion, and his name was J.W. Forrester, and he was a professor at MIT. When I say was, he recently passed away. I think he passed away in 2016, and he's the among other things, he was the founder of system dynamics theory, which deals with the interactions between objects in a dynamic system. Okay, so J.W. Forrester has done a lot of work over the course of his lifetime, and he was involved in many areas of inquiry, a rather intellectually curious individual. And a couple of quotes here, I think, would give us a sense of the mind of J.W. Forrester and how it might be able to help us in coming up with these training programs for the risk management in oil platform operations. Okay, here's one of the quotes from Mr. Forrester that I think is useful. And he says, quote, "The engineer," he's talking about engineering here, "the engineer must, in the course of his work, identify significant and critical problems." Okay. And that's kind of like what we're trying to do here. "But in his education," and this is a big but here, "but in his education, problems given have been predetermined and assigned. He must develop judgments to know what solutions to problems are possible, but in the school that he attends, the problems encountered have known solutions." So, in other words, Dr. Forrester is talking about the fact that this is really not a very good exercise in problem analysis or decision making, because all of the problems that were given have known solutions. So it's pretty much a textbook operation. Now, he goes on to say that the engineer or the professional should be excited by new and unsolved problems. But for years, he has lived in an educational system where he knows he is repeating others' work. He goes on to say, in complex systems, cause and effect are often not closely related in either time or space. And he goes on further to say that the structure of complex systems is not a single feedback loop. Causes are usually not found in prior events, but within the structure of the system itself. And this is a very famous quote by Dr. Forrester. He says the complex systems in complex environments, and I've used this before, by the way, Complex environments and complex systems behave counterintuitively. That is, the plausible tends to be wrong. Okay, so one of our members mentioned that discussion that deals with quotes from J.W. Forster and his work. And so the idea here is to let's see if we could figure out how we can go about putting together these training modules on risk management. Now, the other member of the team was tasked with taking a look at the aviation industry, because the aviation industry appears to have been struggling with or have dealt with this issue of risk management and complex systems and all of this stuff previously, and they've come up with something or some set of solutions to this problem that they faced with respect to dealing or performing complex in performing in a complex environment and dealing with the management of risk or risk management issues. So this individual gets up and continues his discussion from last week on the aviation industry. Aviation, he says, was thrust into the world of complexity early on as a result of rapid advancements made as a result of World War II and the ongoing effort to expand the realm of flight into all weather, day-night operations. So you begin to see that we are really dealing not only with complex systems, but we're dealing with complex environments when we expand the environment to include everything out there, all weather, day, night, in all its various complexities and situations. And it continues. So while the man-machine system became increasingly complex with added subsystems and components, the velocity of the vehicle increased, going from propellers to jets and so forth. The velocity of the vehicle increased, compounding the complexity issue. Rapid advancements in technology preoccupied the industry up until about 1987. Excuse me. Technology, it was assumed, would bring about improved operational capabilities, particularly in speed, altitude, and day-night operations. And the general consensus was that this heavy application of technology would improve the overall performance and the safety, operational safety of the industry. So the operational capabilities did improve with the advent of large four-engine piston aircraft, followed by large four-engine jet aircraft. But safety, inexplicably, did not improve. It did not improve as expected, and in fact, it began to deteriorate to the consternation of the Congress, regulatory agencies, the industry, as well as the military. Now was the time for innovation. Now, what was missing in this whole thing? So there was a one or more missing ingredients in this conceptual structure that was created to try to understand this industry. What was missing was that which is necessary to manage complexity. In other words, complexity management was not identified as a primary skill set, was not identified as something that was necessary or a necessary part of the total system package. And so the total system package was incomplete. Complexity management was one of the incomplete parts. So the ability to manage complexity and conduct complex problem solving, most operational problems that were understood were, in fact, rather straightforward and simplistic. with the solutions preordained. The aviation industry's performance model did not contain human performance, complex problem solving, critical thinking, and human psychology. It also completely missed the key mission objectives, which is the purpose of the activity or the purpose of the operation. So what the industry attempted to do, what they decided that they needed to do, was to develop or create mission realistic training for the operators. So mission realistic training and evaluation was an important missing ingredient and was finally formally addressed. So that brings us now to the next part of this discussion, which is bridging the complexity barrier. And here is the, well, here's the rub, folks. Here is the really the great difficulty and the gigantic wall that had to be breached, because bridging the complexity barrier was not easy. It was poorly understood. In some cases, people didn't think it was necessary. They thought that business as usual was going to be okay, or we had to double down on what we were already doing. But something new and innovative needed to be uncovered, needed to be addressed, needed to be inserted into the performance model for this particular industry. And so I would call it bridging the complexity barrier. Traditional education will not work in bridging the complexity barrier. I know that sometimes it's hard for people to understand, but more and more we are learning from various places and individuals and organizations that traditional education will not work. Here are some quotes attributed to J.W. Forrester and others. They talk about traditional skills versus non-traditional skills. Non-traditional skills and knowledge that embraces whole systems, adaptability, dynamics, self-organization, and the purpose of the activity. These are the ingredients for a set of training modules that address the management of risk in complex environments for oil platform operators and managers. And these subject areas are now beginning to emerge. One of the things that has to be addressed in terms of this complex environment that we call that is representative of this oil platform situation. One of the things is that the dynamics of the system. So we're dealing with a complex system. We're dealing with the dynamics of this particular system, which we call the offshore oil platform. And what are the system dynamics? Can we identify them? Can we understand them? So system dynamics is an approach to understand the nonlinear behavior of complex systems over time. System dynamics, according to J.W. Forrester and others, is an aspect of systems theory and proposes that the dynamical structure of any system and its variables and interactions and self-organization is often just as important as in determining the behavior of the components themselves. The property of the whole often cannot be explained in terms of the behavior of the parts. So, in other words, our training program, whatever we put together to try to address risk management in this complex environment, our training program should not be piecemeal, but mission-oriented and mission-realistic. Also, it should address the coordinated team performance. In other words, it should address the human population on the oil platforms, should address the human population as a whole, as a coordinated system. Three, it should address complex nonlinear problem solving under increased time compression. All right. Now, that's particularly important. So complex problem solving, however we want to deal with it, it must be dealt with. And it must be dealt with, hopefully, in a way that is meaningful and can, in fact, support the idea of improving or optimizing performance. It must also acknowledge the key mission objectives that are in play in any one particular point in time. Okay, so that is our discussion for this week on our continuing discussion on critical thinking and this scenario that we've created, which is we are designing, or hopefully will design soon, a set of training modules to address ourselves to risk management on these offshore oil platforms, or in a more general sense, it's risk management in complex environments, and or finally, another term that is often used, which I kind of like this term a lot, it's called complex problem solving. So that sort of embraces everything. So complex in terms of the problem is complex and the environment is complex. So we need to understand what it means to be complex, or what it means to be in an area or in an arena that is complex. It also addresses itself to solving problems. How do we solve problems in this particular environment? Is this a straightforward thing, or are there new skills that have to be developed and new ideas that have to be implemented? And probably first and foremost, are there new tools that have to be designed and developed and employed to help us solve complex problems? All right. So that is our discussion for critical thinking for this week. Now let's press on to part two. All right. Welcome back to Throttle Up part two for this week. Part two, of course, is our storyboard. And this is a story of America as we continue our story of America. And the title for this week is America in a Changing World. And we're going to be talking about two subjects. But before I do, I forgot to mention in part one that remember the Future of Jobs report by the World Economic Council. They said or asserted that by the year 2020, critical thinking and complex problem solving will be the number one skill set in the job market. Okay, so that sort of like justifies the existence and the purpose of this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I think it is something that we all need to take rather seriously. And that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to discuss it in a meaningful way so that it can be useful in our lives. So, okay, in part two, we're going to be talking again, America in a Changing World. First thing we're going to be talking about is the National Security Strategy, or our National Security Strategy that has just been articulated by Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor to President Donald Trump. Now, this national security strategy was recently articulated in a conference at the Reagan Library, and I wanted to point it out because I thought it's a really good starting point to understand how America should think of itself and how America should position itself on the global stage. What is it? What is America's role on the global stage, and how should America think about its role, and how should it go about pursuing this role or accomplishing the objectives with respect to this particular vision? So Now, as you well know, probably, that I'm all about vision. I promote it extensively. I like the idea. What is our vision? Vision is a top-level picture. In aviation, we would call it the big picture. And what is our vision for America as it positions itself, as it operates on the world stage as a major player? So we are a major player on the world stage, whether we like it or not. And how should we behave? How should we go about doing the things that ought to be done, doing the things that America can do best? Okay, so the four pillars of our new national security strategy, again, as articulated by General McMaster, is, number one, protection. And this is protecting the American people and our homeland. Okay, so protection from danger, if you will. Physical danger, economic danger, and all kinds of dangers, climatic dangers, protecting the American people and the homeland. The second leg in the pillar is, or the second pillar is prosperity. And that makes a lot of sense. And we will be discussing that in a bit. We'll be talking about the tax reform initiative and the tax legislation, the new tax legislation that has been passed by the Senate recently. We'll be talking about that momentarily. And it's a good thing because prosperity is the second leg in the second pillar. What does that mean? It means advancing America's prosperity through growth, trade, and expansion of industry. Okay, so that is prosperity, pretty important. Now, with respect to trade, I think all of us now understand the difference between free trade and fair trade. I think free and fair trade is necessary. If we don't have fair trade, if we have other countries dumping on American soil products that they produce under cost and they are subsidized somehow, that's not fair. Okay, so prosperity. And of course, that brings into question here, what is America's prosperity model? We will be discussing that in future shows. I have addressed that in one of the books that I have out there in national distribution. It's part of the Commitment to Reason series. And I have addressed that specifically, and I will be talking about that very soon on future shows, because I think it's particularly important now that we have a new tax policy going into effect soon. We should be talking about that on a regular basis. The third pillar is peace. And this means peace through strength, countering global belligerents such as China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, terrorism, and others. Okay, now that's a big one. All right, that's huge, but that is really, that's been our role in life, if you will, as a country. We have always been working, or should always be working, toward peace and to rein in the hostile actors, prevent the hostile actors from damaging America and Americans. And if, last but not least, is confidence. And this is to reclaim America's strategic confidence. Right. And that's sort of like a big one for me, and I hopefully for many of us. America needs to be comfortable in its own skin. America needs to be confident that what it's doing is the right thing to do. America needs to stand as a beacon for all the world to see, as a shining light of morality, the shining light of goodness, prosperity, and justice. Justice for all. So those are the four big pillars of our strategic vision, if you will. And let me just summarize those. The first one is protection. Second one is prosperity. The third one is peace. And this is world peace, if you will. And the fourth one is confidence or strategic confidence. Confidence in our global image, or confidence and global image. Our strategic confidence and global image waxes and wanes all throughout history. You can see this if you take a historical perspective. And going back in history to our early days, we can see that our first attempt to reverse our declining global image was with Thomas Jefferson as president, sending the Marines to Tripoli to counter the growing threat to commerce by the pirates. And by the way, he was successful in doing so. And that was probably one of the first attempts, successful attempts, to reverse our declining image worldwide. Also, after Vietnam, America's global image suffered immensely because, although I would even go so far as to say exclusively because, we actually didn't win that war. So why were we fighting it? There had to be some reason why we were fighting it. We just quit. We quit on the battlefield and we left our weapons there and we walked off the battlefield and we went home. So what was the point? Now, especially in Asia, and this prompted a concerted effort by us post-Vietnam to reverse this degraded image brought about by diminishing self-confidence. And that is something that we will continue our discussions about, because I was directly involved in that as a Vietnam War veteran. So I can shed some light on that particular issue from a firsthand perspective. Okay, now let's move on to tax reform. Tax reform is a hot button issue, and it's a big thing now. It's a big thing in America, and finally the Senate has passed a tax bill that is supportive of a new tax policy, supportive of a rethinking of our economic prosperity model, and hopefully a delivering to the American public at large a less burdensome tax system and a less burdensome and bothersome federal government. Now, here is an article, and I thought I would read this because I think it's important to get this out and to give credit where credit is due in this thing. And here is an article by Senator Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, a Kentucky Republican, is Senate Majority Leader. Now, he wrote an article in the December 4th issue of the Wall Street Journal, and it's an opinion on the opinion page, so it's an opinion piece. He goes on to say this: for many Americans, the legacy of the Obama economy is sluggish growth, stagnant paychecks, and missed opportunities. A lost generation of workers still struggle with the consequences of the Great Recession and find it nearly impossible to get ahead. One of the biggest obstacles to their success has been our nation's complex an outdated tax code. For too long, it has been dragged down, or it has dragged down our economy and taken too much from their paychecks. That's why the Republican-led Senate passed a critical tax reform bill that will help make Americans an economic powerhouse again. We did that by putting more money into the pockets of hardworking families and small businesses, creating more jobs and economic opportunity, and taking steps to ensure that jobs and businesses stay in America. This was a once-in-a-generation opportunity that we could not let pass us up. All right. So far, so good. I would agree with that. I would also point out from a personal observation that what he's talking about here, what is the constituency? What are these Americans he's talking about? He's talking about what I would call, and what many people call, the lost Americans, or the forgotten Americans, the working Americans that most of both political parties forgot even existed until Donald Trump entered on the political scene. So I'll continue with Senator McConnell's article. The Senate Finance Committee, under the leadership of Chairman Orrin Hatch, produced legislation to rethink the tax code fundamentally. Senator Hatch led his committee through years of work, dozens of hearings, and a full markup. It approved a good bill, one our constituents deserve, and one I am proud the full Senate passed. I am grateful for Mr. Hatch's consistent efforts to boost the economy, support workers and families, and accomplish our shared goals. Since Republicans in Congress began working on tax reform with the Trump administration, everyone has agreed that middle-class families must be at the heart of our plan. They will benefit from tax rates that are lower, simpler, and fairer. Our bill doubles the child's tax credit, preserves the adoption tax credit for families that open their homes to children in need, and roughly doubles the standard deduction. Under the plan we passed, a medium-income family of four could see a tax cut of nearly $2,200, money, by the way, that it could use for anything from helping a child through college to saving for retirement. Continuing with this rather interesting article and remarkable article by Mitch McConnell, our plan will also help small businesses grow. That's why it has the support of prominent advocates, including the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Lower taxes will help small businesses create jobs, invest more, and spur economic growth. Simplifying the tax code will reduce compliance costs and make it possible for job creators to reinvest more of their own money in their enterprises. It will help American businesses succeed in an increasingly competitive global market. All right. Now, I will say, well, again, from my personal observation, that's crucial. America needs to be competitive on the global market. And in order for America to be competitive on the global market, it needs to have resources, physical, human resources. It also needs to have a friendly tax environment, a economically friendly tax environment. Previously, the tax environment has been hostile. I will continue with this remarkable article. In addition to these important provisions of the tax bill, the Senate also voted to deliver relief to low and middle income Americans by repealing Obamacare's individual mandated tax. For too long, families have suffered under this unpopular and unfair tax imposed under an unworkable law. The bill also includes a plan from Chairman Lisa Murkowski of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee that will further develop Alaska's oil and gas potential in an environmentally responsible way. I proudly support her proposal, which will strengthen national security, create good jobs, and provide new sources of energy, making the U.S. less dependent on foreign sources. Lowering taxes for families and small business is a central part of President Trump's agenda, and we work together toward this accomplishment for the American people. After a substantive and lengthy debate through an open process, we passed legislation that fulfills goals shared by congressional Republicans and the president. Democrats once claimed to support many of the foundational aspects of our legislation, like lowering taxes for the middle class and ending incentives for corporations to ship jobs overseas. But when it came time to vote, they chose partisanship over reform. I was disappointed to see that our colleagues on the other side of the aisle continue to oppose good ideas simply because they don't like the current occupant of the White House. Now, in future shows, I'm going to have more to say about that. That's a rather depressing state of affairs, and it points out that the Democratic Party is now a party of radicals. And we will talk more about that as we discuss this radical agenda, and we'll discuss in some form or fashion Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals. I think you can see that they are playing from that book. Apparently that's their Bible. In the final paragraph here from Mitch McConnell's article, I am proud that the Senate rose to take advantage of this historic opportunity to give a break to middle-class families through tax reform. Now we will work with members of the House to send a final product to Mr. Trump for his signature. Once we do, you will be able to keep more of your own hard-earned money. You and your neighbors will be free to pursue more opportunities, and employers across the country will have fewer reasons to move your jobs overseas. That completes the article, a rather remarkable article, I would say. And I would say congratulations to the Senate. And I know that the House has passed their version, and now it's in committee not even sure what the term is. They have to bring together the House version and the Senate version into some consolidated, coherent package. And then it will be signed, hopefully very soon, by President Trump. Okay, so tax reform is, in fact, an important part of America's economic prosperity model, but it is only a part. Okay, welcome back to part three. Part three is our radio essay, and for the last few weeks, we've been talking about The Art of War by Sun Tzu. And this week, we will discuss that in terms of North Korea. And North Korea is a particularly important aspect of this, of our foreign policy, what's going on in the world today. It's rather depressing and even frightening, but we need to understand it in terms of, or from, a critical thinking perspective. So to continue our discussion and to bring in North Korea into this overall discussion of the art of war, there's a rather interesting article, again in the Wall Street Journal opinion section, by Daniel Nidess. N-I-D-E-S-S is his name. He's a former Marine. He says that China's hands appear to be tied, and it is said it fears a humanitarian crisis on the North Korean-Chinese border if the North Korean regime is toppled. China, it is assumed, does not want a newly formed non-communist country on its border where North Korea once stood. Another possibility is that China is deliberately allowing tensions on the Korean Peninsula to escalate. And the reason is to demonstrate the weakness of the economically largest capitalistic country, that is the United States. So they are doing that to poke a stick in our eye and to demonstrate to the world that capitalism, at least in terms of how America defines capitalism, is inferior to their system, which is largely socialistic and communistic. Using North Korea to highlight the limits of American power and influence would fit into a larger Chinese strategy of discrediting U.S. relevance and prestige in the Asian Pacific region. China has continued its imperial expansion into the South China Sea with its chain of artificial islands. Beijing's ability to flout a legally binding decision by an international tribunal on a territorial dispute with the Philippines further reinforces America and its allies' weaknesses, according to this article, and speaking with the perspective of the Chinese. They view America and its allies as to be weak and China to be strong. The article just goes on by saying that China, by allowing the North Korean problem to persist, demonstrates, so this train of thought goes, that the growing impotence of America and its allies. All right, we will continue that discussion next week and in future weeks as we continue our discussion of Sun Tzu and the Art of War, try to bring those two things together to see if we can understand what's going on here from a critical thinking and global perspective, and also a historical perspective. I can see by the clock on the wall that we are closing on another Trottle Up radio show. And so I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for giving us the opportunity to have Trottle Up available to the listening audience on weekends. We are available three times every weekend, twice on the Encore channel and once on the main channel. So thank you again, all you great folks at Red State Talk Radio. I would like to thank my listening audience for being there once again. We are quite honored to be here and honored to be talking to you, this listening audience that we call the audience of Great America. Thank you, all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. As a fellow veteran, I am proud to be part of your amazing organization. I would like to also thank the families of veterans and the families of those on active duty in the Guard and Reserve. Thank you also for supporting this noble cause. All right, that completes another Trottle Up Radio show, and we will see you all next week.